All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of SaberSims DFS Office Hours. Today is Wednesday, July 23rd of 2025. Looking ahead here, we did have a six-game early MLB slate get underway already. Good luck to all of you playing that slate. There is a five-game main MLB slate later this evening. There was some LCK back for League of Legends today. We had 18 tennis matches get underway a couple hours ago. Good luck to all of you playing some tennis. And then later this evening, there is a single WNBA showdown slate. And then we have golf teeing off tomorrow morning. And then we also have live golf on Friday of this week. So should be a fun day of DFS. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew, one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS related questions, get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim team. Just can't say enough good things about the Discord. But with that said, we do this show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we do this show on Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. So tune in any one of those. I'm going to get SaberSim pulled up here, and I'm going to pull up the upcoming golf slate, because on Wednesdays, we usually try and do a golf demo. Did have some questions come in prior to the show, so we will start there and then roll into a demo. So, first question of the day. I typically use max / median ROI and projected score metrics, have occasionally had 3-4-digit max ROI and still minimum placement. And on other days, I struggle to get above a double-digit sim ROI. Any insight on what should be a reasonably expected portfolio sim ROI? I usually try a few times to increase when single to double digit, but beginning to think also need to begin adjusting when astonishingly high or ignore max and concentrate on a median, a better approach. Okay, so a couple things here, right? It sounds like these are pre-slate sim ROIs, right? So in general, you know, max, I would expect max to always be like really high. You know, usually max means like, what is your ROI when like you win the contest, right? It's also going to depend if you're looking at this pre-slate versus late swap, right? Because late swap is using actual scores like as they come in. So your late swap ROI, like if you get off to like a really good start on a slate, your late swap ROI could be really, really high because it's saying like, hey, you are live to win this contest. Like when we play out the sims for the rest of the contest or like play out the rest of the games that haven't started, you know, you win a certain amount of the time. And like max is like your max achievable ROI, which is, you know, effectively like winning the contest. Right. So that's something to be aware of. Now, as far as like what I think you should look at, me personally, I just use average ROI, which is close to median ROI. I'm like fairly positive that anytime, you know, you're building, like, yeah, you have a chance of winning. So I'm not super concerned about like my max. As far as my min, you know, I will just like set an ROI greater than zero filter. That way I don't have to worry about my min. Only time I would like worry about my min is like if I'm making a bunch of changes and I'm like worried that I'm going to dip into negative ROI territory. So that's why I personally just like focus on like either like median or average ROI. I think those are fine to look at. Now, I think that if you're seeing really high ROIs, a couple things could be going on. Number one is you've made a lot of projection adjustments, right? Like if these are the baseline projections, right? And I increase Sam Burns by 10 points because I think he's going to win. You know, the field lineups are being created off the assumption that Sam Burns's average projection is 79.6. Now, if I were to give his projection as like an input to the field lineup, saying, you know, no, create the field lineups as if he's projected for 89 points. Well, then his ownership is going to be like way higher, right? Like he might be 75% owned. Like if that was like the circumstance, right? Because he'd be so further away from the next closest golfer, his value goes up and he's just like an amazing play at that point, right? So when you increase his projection, and I'm not saying you did, but I'm saying it's a possibility, right? When you use custom projections, make adjustments, those get taken into account in the contest sim. And the way it happens is whatever the player scores, we basically add your adjustment on top of that. So Sam Burns scores, you know, 109, right? He has his 85th percentile. He now scores 119. And then, you know, same for like every other spot. So you're basically saying this player does so much better, and you probably built lineups with that. So then you end up with a lot more exposure to him in your pool, which like inflates your ROIs, right? So custom projections, you got to be a little bit careful with contest sim ROIs. Number two is obviously late swap. If you're doing good and your sim ROIs are going up, that's actually a really good thing, right? It means you're off to a hot start. And then the last thing that I do want to mention, you know, talking about like, hey, some might have like single digit ROIs, some might have double digit. The prize, the payout structure and the contest are going to impact these, right? If it is a, you know, 129,000 entrant milli maker is like a lot different than like a 5% to first single entry with like 200 people, right? So some of this comes down to like format. Some of it comes down to unique entrants. Like how many people does it take to fill up this contest? And then other thing is like how top heavy is the payout structure, right? So all those things can lead to differences in ROIs across contests. I wouldn't be so much comparing my ROIs between my groups. Like if I have, you know, two groups and I have, you know, two contests, I'm like, oh, why is, you know, the average ROI in this one 100% and the average ROI in this one is like 20%, right? That's probably more a circumstance of the contests. So I wouldn't read into that too much, but feel like we hit all the different spots here on this question. Let me know if there's something I missed or need clarification or any type of follow-up, but a good question to get us started. All right, next question. Using Portfolio Plus, how are the contest sims used to create lineups? When using Min Uniques, the lineups were sorted by ROI or whatever metric I wanted. What metric or metrics are being used for Portfolio Plus? How do I influence what is picked? Okay, so with Portfolio, well, let's talk about ROI, right? So with ROI and Uniques at one, your lineups are ranked highest ROI to lowest. Okay. With Portfolio Plus, we are using the target ROI for the contest in question. If there is more than one contest in a group, we are averaging the ROI and then using that average ROI across the contests to rank the lineups. So effectively, the lineups are ranked highest ROI to lowest. What the portfolio does is it figures out which lineups best complement each other while still using ROI as the source of truth. So it, for instance, lineups one and two might be the highest ROI, but they might be super, super correlated. And maybe you don't have one player different between the two, or like it's a 2v2, it's a 1v1, something like that. Well, portfolio is deciding that maybe lineup five complements lineup one better than lineup two does. That's what portfolio is doing. It's still using ROIs. The lineups are graded by ROI. It's analyzing them by ROI, but it's looking at them in a different technical way, where it's figuring out which lineups are best played together for the best long-term results. So That includes like swinginess. That includes, you know, when like it is trying to, you know, minimize your losses while still helping you to like win as much as possible. So same source, you actually cannot pick what is used for portfolio. So portfolio will only use the target ROI. You cannot like use a custom contest sim and say, hey, use this instead. It doesn't exactly work that way currently in its current form. All right, next question. I'm finding that I get what I think are my best MLB lineups by sorting my 5,000 lineup pool by contest ROI and then handpicking the ones that have a relatively high projection and a stack structure I like. Without handpicking and only sorting by ROI, I end up with some low projection stuff I don't like, and sorting only by projection gives me lineups that are too owned or too uncorrelated. Could I be using rules or filters to expedite this process? Okay, so maybe is the answer, because part of this is subjective into me and you could both look at the same lineup and I could determine I like the lineup and you could determine you don't like the lineup, right? So a little bit is like that personalization factor of like when you look at the lineup, you're saying, hey, I like this lineup, right? So part of that you can't automate. Some things you can do to get closer to what you want, right? It sounds like you want to make sure that you're playing like a 4 or 5 stack. You want to play well-projected lineups. Like those type of things you can use SaberSim to help you do, right? So like what I would do is I would go to my let's go to baseball. Okay, so I come to baseball. So first thing I could do is set a rule, right? And I would use a stack advanced rule. I think the advanced rules are the best. Always change pitcher to greater than or equal to 0. Change this option with all positions to greater than. Oh, let me remove myself. Scoot over. All right, so greater than or equal to 0 for pitcher. All positions, this is basically all batters, greater than or equal to 4. And then I would save that, right? So that accomplishes the stacking part that you're looking to do. Then the second part of getting rid of some of the low projected stuff, right? Now, the way I recommend doing this is to run the build. And we'll let this build run. All right, build's almost done. Okay, so the reason, and I think it's like a good thing to talk about. I think, you know, being aware of your lower projected lineups is important. And the reason for that usually comes down to the fact that like, okay, this lineup with a really low ownership could be good if these player ownership projections are accurate, right? We see like, and this is just like a top lineup, like just for example, there's like 4%, 2%, 3%, right? If I look at that top lineup, it's 92.7 projected, but then I scroll down, right? Some of these are higher. Some of these like 95.1, 94.3, 94, right? So like the 92.7 like is like a little bit on the lower side here. This lineup could be good, but what if Willier Abreu comes in 6% owned? What if Yoshida comes in 4% owned? What if Duran comes in 6% owned, right? Instead of, you know, 3%, 2%, 4%, what if they come in like, you know, 5%, 6%, 7%? When these lineups are low projected, you know, a lot of their ROI is coming from the fact that they're not played very much in the contest sim. So although they're low projected, they get there often enough where it ends up working out and they, you know, end up winning. But if you take a low projected lineup, add even a couple points of ownership, right, which is very within like the range of outcomes here, you know, this lineup could go from like positive ROI to negative ROI rather fast if the low owned pieces that are helping this lineup win end up being higher owned than expected. So like that is one reason that people will like chop off some of the lower projected lineups just to kind of project against like that fragile ROI. Now, I would recommend just using a player pool filter and then setting something up where it's like show lineups with projected score, I don't know, greater than 90 here, right? This is like what we had. Save it. See how many lineups go in the trash. And like 164, right? And you know, maybe that's like, I always talk about like 10 to 20%, right? It's like for me, that might be like a little much, but here, right? Okay, great. You add in this step, sure, but your top lineup hasn't changed, right? You still have that same lineup. So like, I might look at this like, well, you know, it's projected well enough. I'm okay with this. And then somebody else might look at this and say like, I don't like it, right? So I think there are ways to get closer to what you want, right? Like a 4-5 stack rule, a projection filter to filter out like some of the lowest projected lineups so you don't have to even consider them. But then there still might be some like fine tuning needed to make sure you like approve of every lineup that you're seeing if you want to be that granular. So those are some things I would consider implementing, and that is my advice. All right. Next question. On what slates would it not be necessary to use the don't use batters versus opposing pitcher rule? Good question. So I think for sure 2-game slates, you should leave it off. That is something I will always do. It doesn't look like we have a 2-gamer today. Oh, we have a 2-gamer yesterday, 3-gamer. Three. Okay, so there was a 2-gamer, it looks like Sunday, 20th, whatever it is, 20th was, 22nd was Tuesday, 21st was Monday. Yeah, 20th on Sunday. So 2-game slates, I would like definitely leave this off, okay? It is, you know, the less games on the slate, the closer to the optimal lineup you're going to need. Now, you might not need the true optimal, but you're going to need, you know, a lot of pieces from it typically, right? Especially to win like larger GPPs. So there are, I mean, I think this happens like often enough. And we'll just like look at some pitchers who like did good. Okay. Pepiot, 65% owned, 15 fantasy points. Okay. So he's probably like a really good play. I imagine like a lot of winning lineups had him in it because his ownership's high. He did well enough. So then, okay, so then let's go and look at Baltimore. Okay, so you look at this lineup, right? And their leadoff hitter has 18 points. Their 4-hitter has 14, and their 9-hitter has 14. So like, there is like a very real possibility. You could have both like Pepiot and Jackson Holliday. You know, that is like a very real possible like winning lineup, right? I actually want to see like the box score for this. I want to see what his like line was. Cause like you gotta remember, I mean, you know, the bullpen pitches too, right? A starter goes, you know, 5 innings, pitches like decent, like team can still get to the bullpen, you know. So There's, I think those type of situations, you can overcome them when there are 4 games, 5 games, 10 games, you know, when there are lots of games on the slate, you don't need those points. Right. But in another slate where there are less options, you know, you're going to start needing some of those pieces in order to win, right? And especially like differentiate yourself. So yeah, so it looks like, oh wow, Pepia gave up 5 runs, but he had 8 strikeouts, right? So like that was like the big factor for him. He had 8 strikeouts, even though he gave up the runs. And then, and it looks like Robbie Ray pitched very, very badly. And, you know, there's obviously like only 4 starters, right? So like fading Ray, playing 2 out of 3 of these guys. You know, Toronto wasn't the only team like you could stat and win. Sorry, I got to close this MLB stuff I was looking at. Too many resources. All right. But yeah, so I think for sure 2-game slates, you leave it off. There is, I don't know what you would do for 3-gamers. I feel like you could leave it off for a 3-game slate. And remember, right, just because the rule is off doesn't mean SaberSim is like going to jam those players in. It's like SaberSim is not like, yes, finally I can just like add in all of the batters against the opposing pitcher. I've been dying to do this, right? Like that's not what's happening. Remember that, you know, correlation slider on a 3-game slate is still at 6, right? The correlation slider drives negatively correlated players apart. And then it brings positively correlated players together, right? So say we're going to take, you know, Corbin Carroll, for example, right? Corbin Carroll is facing, you know, Miles Mikolas. And he has a negative 0.34 correlation. In order for Carroll to get into a lineup with Mikolas, there is a very finite number of things that need to happen for them to appear in the lineup together, right? Like, Carroll probably has to, like, walk or get, like, a hit, you know, steal 2 bases, not score, and then get, you know, another hit, like, later in the game or something like that, where, you know, I'm just, like, making up some scenario where he gets on base, he gets points, but it doesn't actually hurt Mikolas that much, right? Like those are like the type of things and that can happen, but it happens so rare, right? So you're always remember that you're going to get these things in your lineups at the rate that they are effectively optimal in the Sims, right? It's like, hey, you know, you shouldn't play Carroll with Mikolas most of the time, but you know, 1-3% of the time, given the size of this slate, you know, it's actually okay to do so. And you're playing, you know, 150 lineups, right? So that might come up a couple times and, you know, maybe it's okay, right? So always remember that, you know, the bullpen has to pitch too. There are ways where both players can get there, right? Carroll gets a home run. Maybe we saw it yesterday, right? Like Jacob deGrom gives up a leadoff home run to Lawrence Butler. And then he ends up like striking out like 9 guys and still doing like really, really good. Right. So those things happen. I think the less games on the slate, the more you should consider leaving it open. I don't know where I would draw the line. You know, I know Duckman here recommended like 4 games and less to leave it off. I feel like you got to kind of determine, like, I would probably leave it off for 2-gamers. I'd probably leave it off for 3-gamers. 4 feels like a decision point. You know, do I want to leave it off? Do I want to turn it on? And then I would say probably for like 5-gamers, I'd probably have it on. So 4 seems like that point where you're kind of at like a crossroad and you got to figure out what you want to do. But I would say, you know, you are like fairly safe leaving it off because correlation slider will actually drive those players apart. All right, next question. With your experience from Flashback, could you confidently express what stack type does better for two-game slate? Usually I play heavy 4-3 on all. So what I've been doing, and I'll tell you guys what I've been doing, is studying like the best players in the lobby and like seeing what stack types they play, right? So anybody could do this, you know? And so it's like, okay, to like talk about. But like, let's say we go to, we'll just stick like with this Sunday one, right? Because we're already here. Like, okay, you know, I'm curious about like what stack types I want to play. You could do this by slate too, right? I know this is like a main slate. You could look at turbos, right? You could look at any two gamer, like go and find them, night slate, express, whatever. Okay, I'm going to go to the biggest prize pool contest for that slate. And once this loads, then I'm going to go to users. What I would do is like, if you don't know how many max entries there are, just sort by entries. Okay, this is 150 max. Okay. Right click, filter for 150 maxers, sort by sim ROI. And then there's a couple of different things you could do here, right? You could look at the highest sim ROIs. You could look at names, you know, you could look at the winner if they're in this category, right? Like here, Scout is 5% sim ROI. He's still like top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eighth on the list, seventh on the list, maybe seventh. And they won, right? So they had the benefit of like, okay, hey, Scout here. And then I realize you can't see it. Scout is like good sim ROI and they won. You know, let's go see what they played, right? Okay, so I go to the magnifying glass, filters for their 150. When it filters for their 150, it also displays their exposures for their 150. Okay, I go to stack exposures. Okay, hey, look, 43% 5-2, 22% 5-3, 19% 5-stack, right? So what is that? 66%, about over 85% of their lineup here or their portfolio is 5-stacks, right? Now, this like might, okay, this is like one person on like an 8-game slate, you know? So if you're curious about two-game slates, go and look at two-game slates, right? Look at multiple two-game slates. Look at multiple players, right? So like, okay, 5-2 standing out here, right? Okay, well, what if we take the highest sim ROI player now, okay? All right, I go and click on this player. Okay, kind of similar, right? 40-ish percent 5-2s, all 5-stacks are the top three, right? Okay, let's go and click on somebody we know. Right? Maybe they're a little bit lower sim ROI, but maybe they're like a well-known name. And, you know, Squirrel Patrol, right? Very good DFS player. Okay, we click on Squirrel. We go to the projections. Okay, a lot flatter, but still a lot of 5-stacks, right? 21% 5-2, 20% 5-3, 12% 4-3, 10% 5s. So for me, you know, my biggest takeaway is like, you know, it is not a bad thing here to just like, in my opinion, set like a hard and fast rule. Like, yeah, I'm just going to play a 5-stack in every lineup. And I am probably more correct than I am wrong. If you wanted like hard and fast rules, right? Or you could like take this information, run a build, see what kind of stacks you're getting naturally, and then decide, do I need to adjust this, right? Like, okay, maybe I go and I just run a build on my own, right? And I don't make too many adjustments. I let SaberSim do its thing. And then maybe I'm seeing that my highest two stacks are like 4-stacks, right? But what I would probably do in that situation is like, you know what? Maybe I need to like crank up correlation a little bit, right? Maybe I want to tell the builder, you know, kind of based on what I'm seeing, I want my lineups to have more stacks. And one of the easiest ways to do that is to just increase the correlation slider, right? So I could do that here. So those are like the type of things, those are the ways you can get answers to those type of questions. And then If you only play FanDuel, you know, I know we don't have flashback for FanDuel. You could kind of just like take the same logic that like max stacks are like good. Like the most players you can stack on a team is generally good, right? So then I would basically make sure I'm like always playing a four stack, you know, minimum in my lineups, right? And I think that's probably even like a rule you could set on FanDuel, like that advanced rule we talked about earlier. You go to stack, you go to advanced, you go to pitcher greater than or equal to zero. And then you go to batters and then you set this to four. I think that's a fine rule for FanDuel, right? Because here we've seen mostly fives, some fours, to say like a four stack minimum is like a totally fine thing to do. It seems like even on DK, and since FanDuel, you can only stack four, then yeah, I would definitely be doing that. So that is how I would be approaching that problem. All right. Jumping back to office hours. Looks like we are caught up there. It is Wednesday, so we do want to talk a little bit of golf here. So let's go back to the upcoming golf slate. All right. We are going back to... All right. Sorry for the buffering. We are back to the golf slate. Clicking on that. Computer did not like that, but that's okay. We're back where we need to be. So let's go to golf. Just realized we were on MLB still. Cool. So for golf, let's say we're going to build, you know, 5,000 lineups. This is just a default rule. No miscut or out players. Okay. One good thing for golf, always check the weather report, right? So I believe we have the 3M open this week. All right. Looks like pretty clean weather. Green all across all the different waves. I'm just going to read overall. Overall, pretty easy to avoid peak winds when the peak wind is barely over 5 miles per hour. I don't think the weather is a big player here. I may be galaxy burning things, but I like the idea of early golfers on Thursday, maybe getting to take advantage of some slower and softer greens after the rain Wednesday night. By the afternoon, sun comes out and the greens may speed up a bit. I'm going to stick with all green here, minimal weather impact. And so we're not going to need any like tee time rules, anything like that. So outside of doing, making adjustments for like hourly golf weather. And just to be clear, I was talking with somebody about this in support. Our sim accounts for weather. However, it accounts for it on a daily basis. So there is a forecast in the sim for Thursday. Now, what some people do is like get more granular with the weather report and try and understand it on an hourly basis so they can take advantage of like usually like the 3 hour break between like morning golfers starting and afternoon golfers starting. We do not account for weather on like that hourly basis. So weather is in the sim as far as like scoring environment and conditions, but you can get more granular, which is where like tee time rules come in. All right. So we're back here. We made our two adjustments, two projections, just going to make the minimum there. And then I'm going to kick off this build. All right. So lineups are finished. Our sim should kick off here. And it does. Cool. I'm going to close the pool. We're going to sort. All right. So I think the sim finished. Okay. So contest sim is done. Right now it's sorting by uniques. So we're going to change this to portfolio. I do want to just like note this, right? Like look at some of the differences here. Give us a sec. So just look at some of the, we're using over 60% and then one player at 42 and then three over 30, right? So, okay, we're taking some notes here. You know, let's go see what portfolio does to these exposures and how it handles them. So our top exposure drops to 38% and then 36. So we still have five players over 30, but we don't have three players over 60 and we don't have one player over 40, right? The players that we're getting this high exposure to 24% owned, 31% owned, 26% owned, right? Like very, the high owned players are getting the higher exposure. So it's offsetting the leverage. Like we don't actually have that much leverage. Before we had 30% leverage on Batia, right? Because he was 60% owned. But now we have 13% leverage. So it takes some stands, but it's a lot better about diversifying out of the gate where you don't need to manually do it with uniques. So from here, right at this point, it's a lot of QA. It's a lot of personalization, setting any exposures that you think you want. I like to have the average projection and average ROI metrics that we actually talked about earlier set up here. That way, if I do make any changes, I can see what impact they're having. But outside of that, right, I mean, there is a lot of single-digit leverage here, which is normally a good thing for golf. Three double-digit leverages for positive. No double-digit leverage for negative. It all feels really good. I'd be happy with the stands that we're taking here, and I'd be ready to save these and upload them to my contest. So that's what I'd be doing for golf here for tomorrow. But with that said, we are all caught up with questions here in office hours and the chats here. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern for our next show. So until then, everybody, take care. Good luck. Thanks. Bye.